I've been waiting to release this interview for about 3 weeks now. Damon Johnson, guitarist for Black Star Riders. We talk about the band, what they have going on, how he got into Alice Cooper.
Just right place, right time. His old guitar player was a friend of mine, Eric Dover, who's also originally from Alabama.
You'll never guess how many times he golfed with the Coop. Plus his project called the Taco Brothers from the early 1990s.
Holy mackerel. I have not heard Taco Brothers mentioned.
And to scramble up the chicken rooster.
Who have you been talking to?
You'll never guess the drummer that joined him on stage one night while in the Taco Brothers. Then there's his keys to success, plus what three legends he played with in Las Vegas, and tons more today with guitarist, singer, songwriter Damon Johnson on Radio Chatter.
From Detroit Rock City.
Detroit Rock City.
This is the Radio Chatter Podcast. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Thank you so much for checking out the Radio Chatter Podcast. I say that every single week, but I do mean it. Thank you for the comments via Twitter at MeltdownWRIF, as well as on my voicemail, 248-586-2988. Actually, I was playing hockey last week, and a guy from Colorado came in to visit some family and friends right here in Detroit. His name is Joe Bonnet, and I met him, and first thing he says is, "Dude, I love your Radio Chatter Podcast." So I appreciate you guys listening. Got a good one on deck for you today, man. I'll tell you what, I haven't seen Damon Johnson in over 18 years, but just talking to him, it's like the flood of memories just came back. This is a fun conversation, fun interview to listen to. Damon Johnson's such an easygoing, sweet guy, and it was really great to reconnect and touch base with him today. As a matter of fact, we were just talking and talking and talking. Also, I'm like, dude, let's just start this interview because we're leaving all this good stuff out there.
Jump in anytime.
I'm jumping in right now. How you doing, Damon?
I'm doing killer, brother. Great to see you, Meltdown.
Welcome back to Detroit Rock City in spring.
Yeah. Is this spring?
This is supposed to be spring.
I think somebody missed an email or something.
Yeah, right, exactly. But anyways, welcome back. You know, you're back here with the Black Star Riders now. And yeah. Tell us a little bit about that.
Black Star Riders is a band that we started 5 years ago out of the foundation that Thin Lizzy had laid. I joined Thin Lizzy in 2011. We toured for a couple of years, and Scott Gorham got the itch, wanted to write some new stuff. Our frontman, Ricky Warwick, who's from Belfast, Northern Ireland originally, been in the music business a long time, proper songwriter, great frontman. Scott just felt like, hey man, I got a good band, let's write some songs. So we thought for about 15 minutes about calling it Thin Lizzy, but thankfully cooler heads prevailed.
Yeah.
And it just wouldn't be right to be Thin Lizzy without Phil Lynott. You can't be Thin Lizzy.
Well, it's funny because you guys do really sound Thin Lizzy-ish.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of that's having Scott in the band, obviously, being part of the songwriting. And, you know, Ricky also possesses that same unique sort of baritone singing voice.
Yeah.
He's not like a lot of the butt rock singers that you and I know plenty of that are all trying to still be Robert Plant or Steve Perry.
Yeah, the butt rock. I haven't heard that in a while. But yeah.
Ricky's not that.
Yeah.
Nor was Phil. You know, so I think it's something we always take as a compliment when people say, hey, there's, you know, there, it reminds me of this sound I've heard before. That's a big compliment. There's never any intent to do that. We just, you know, we're just trying to write good songs with great lyrics and good stories and good riffs. And to tell you the truth, man, I'm as blown away as anybody that this thing has taken off the way it has. We've got a tremendous fan base across the pond.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just talking to Biff, too. It's kind of weird how some bands are like that. It's like they just don't catch on in America, you know?
Well, you probably have had multiple conversations with various artists about, it's like it's this weird Rubik's Cube in America for rock and roll bands that people are still trying to crack. There's a handful of bands doing all right, but just for rock music as a whole, it's a challenge. It really is, now more than ever. And, you know, maybe you guys, you know, the history of WRIF and the legacy that you guys have is so special and so kind of cemented. I know a lot of your listeners just kind of assume maybe that there's great radio stations like The Riff everywhere, and there is not.
Right.
There is not, my friend. You know.
Well, thank you for that.
No, not at all. So It's really the biggest reason, man, we're so stoked to be in Detroit, to be a part of this tour with Judas Priest and Saxon. It's an incredible opportunity for Black Star Riders.
Yeah, you know, with Black Star Riders, I think I was listening to an interview with Scott the other day, and he was talking about, you know, kind of the, like the coastal towns are kind of getting it right now. But it's weird because I think I was talking to Gene Simmons one time, and he says, you know, it wasn't New York City or Los Angeles. It was Detroit and Cleveland. Once those broke, everything broke.
Yeah, man, it's there's definitely a different passion for straight-ahead rock and roll in the Midwest. It's funny we're talking about this because I was on the treadmill at the hotel yesterday, and I listened to Bob Seger live in the Silver Bullet Band. What was that, 1975?
You're trying to get in the Detroit mode, huh?
All of it, man, from top to bottom, both sides of the full length, man. It was just incredible, and the history of music in this town is unparalleled, you know. And we, all of us musicians that come through town, man, we feel that. We love it. I took my wife and my kids to Third Man Records yesterday, Jack White's place. Yeah,
nice.
Man, it was amazing, amazing. And just the history, you know, the killer photos of MC5 and early White Stripe stuff. It's we love Detroit.
Yeah, it's cool. I've Johnny Chow, I've talked about this before, but Johnny Chow from Stone Sour is one of my friends. And last year, in just passing, he said something about listening to albums. That's all he does at his house. And that stuck in my head. And so now I've gone crazy buying records. As a matter of fact, I just bought Armed and Dangerous.
Come on.
Yeah, about a month ago. So.
Come on.
But anyways, yeah, because I didn't grow up like a big Thin Lizzy fan. It was just like, it was something that was a little bit out of my wheelhouse. And then I'm like, well, I'm going to try to rediscover all this stuff. So I'm buying all this stuff now that I didn't really listen to before, you know?
Well, cool, man. Yeah, you know, I've said it so many times, Meltdown, probably even back in the 90s when I was coming through town in Brother Kane.
Yeah.
I used to talk about what an influence Thin Lizzy was for me. So it was mind-blowing to think that, you know, 15 years later, I'd get a phone call to join that band as a guitarist. The legacy of great guitar players in that band is almost unparalleled. So just an honor for me. And the songwriting chemistry that Ricky and I have together is really special. Something I'm proud of and grateful for. So, we feel like it's this cool opportunity, you know, to turn people on to a new band and at the same time talk about what a great band Thin Lizzy was.
Right.
And kind of, you know, shed some light on Scott Gorham and his legacy, man. Those guys made so many great records and so many great songs.
Yeah, no doubt. And you're talking about guitar players. Now, take me back a little bit. Did you take over for Richard Fortus?
Yeah, it's the way it started, when Scott put a Thin Lizzy group, a version of Thin Lizzy together in like 2010, and Vivian Campbell was on guitar with Scott. Then Vivian had to go back to Def Leppard, and they brought Richard Fortus in. And this was like summer of 2011. And then Richard had to go back to Guns N' Roses. And it just so happened that we all did a show together. I was still playing with Alice Cooper.
Mm.
And we did a show in Dublin, ironically, the home of Thin Lizzy.
Right.
It was Def Leppard, Alice Cooper, Thin Lizzy. So I was just stoked to go see Thin Lizzy. So I stood out in the crowd and watched them. It's the first time I had seen Ricky singing, and Richard was still on guitar. Mm. And then one of the guys in my band, in the Alice Cooper band, said, "Hey, dude, I heard they need a guitar player.
Who is that you're talking about?"
I'm talking about Tommy Hendrickson.
Okay.
From the Alice Cooper band. And Tommy said, "I told those guys, man, you'd be the perfect fit." And I was like, "Oh, bro, that's so cool of you. They would never ask me to play in Thin Lizzy."
And here you are.
And then, you know, literally about a month later, it all came together. And Alice was incredibly supportive. He knew what a fan I was. And so, you know, but there was no way we could have seen this, you know, that nothing about it was, "Hey, man, maybe we'll start a new band." You know, that didn't come up until about a year and a half later. So,
Funny enough, I just talked to Doug Aldridge the other day, who also replaced Richard Fortus in a band. That's weird how that works. Richard Fortus is a monster guitar player.
Monster guitar player, such a great guy. He was so helpful for me when I transitioned into Thin Lizzy. We love that guy. We're so happy for Richard. You know, he's the perfect guy to be out there with Guns. Actually, we're going to see Richard next week. We're doing a show with Saxon in St. Louis, a one-off from this tour.
Okay.
And Richard lives in St. Louis, so we're going to drag his ass on stage and jam something together.
And he is so good. That Guns N' Roses tour, by the way, we could talk about that for hours.
Yeah.
But let's talk about this tour, because I was just talking to Biff about this, too. This tour has to be exceeding your expectations.
Well, it is on many levels. You know, we knew that this was going to be the package as far back as like September of last year. Mm-hmm. That's when we first got the call that this is what they were going to put together. Man, I don't know that people were prepared for how great this new Judas Priest record was going to be.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's fantastic. And it's a real return to form for them. The songwriting, Rob's lyrics, the singing, the sound of the record. Richie Faulkner is playing out of his mind. That guy is so great on guitar.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the incredible, unique situation with Glenn Tipton and his health, and then them bringing Andy in, Andy Sneap, their producer, to fill in and fill that guitar role, there's just a lot of talk right now about Judas Priest. And the fact that the record's so good is just, it's the cherry on top of everything. So we're really happy for those guys. And the fans are feeling it. The fans are getting a great package. I mean, to get to come here tonight in downtown Detroit and see, you know, three great rock and roll bands with you know, some deep history. It's pretty cool.
Now, you guys go on at around 7, right?
7 sharp.
7 sharp, okay. So everyone should get here early, at not even here, but just when you guys go and play other parts of the country and stuff.
Yeah, man. You know, we've been pleased that there's been good turnouts early. We want it in Detroit more than any other town.
Yeah.
And because, again, we so respect the rock fans here. They know what's up.
Yeah.
And so we'd love to get on their radar. You know what I'm saying?
For sure.
I think there's a lot of Detroit music fans that are potentially big Black Star Riders fans.
They just don't know it yet.
They will after tonight.
That's right, exactly. I wanted to ask you about Alice Cooper. So you were in the Alice Cooper band. Let's back up just a little bit here. I don't want to get too much into your history. You know, take a long conversation about that, because you've talked about that, I'm sure, ad nauseum.
That's all right.
But you know, Brother Kane comes up there in the 90s. First of all, I want to ask you about Brother Kane, because Brother Kane, being a straight-ahead rock band, kind of hit it a weird time, didn't it?
We hit it a weird time. You can't say it better than that, Meltdown. It's like, if the record had to come out 2 years earlier, I think we could have been a bigger band, because we could have been a part of that scene that kind of Guns N' Roses and the Black Crows had kind of spearheaded. If the record had come out 2 years later, we probably would have been influenced a bit more by the other stuff that was happening.
Mm.
And you never know. I want to think that some of that stuff would have peppered our songwriting in some way, as you always are kind of, or a reflection of what's happening around you. So, yeah, it's like a buddy of mine said. He goes, man, you guys were either 2 years too early or 2 years too late.
But you still had a fair amount of success, considering you were a straight-ahead rock band in the era of grunge.
We did well, man. Yeah. You know, Brother Kane had some great songs.
Mm-hmm.
We got on some great tours. We were blown away, man, that Aerosmith took us out, Van Halen took us out.
Bands you grew up probably idolizing.
Idolizing, man. And then some of our friends in bands like Candlebox, we did a bunch of shows with those guys who we love. And no city more than Detroit, Michigan, man, played our songs in heavy rotation.
Mm.
And, you know, it's just by the time 99, 2000 hit, music had shifted again. We just didn't feel like we had a place in it anymore. You know, things got really heavy, you know, with the Corns and the Limp Bizkits and all of that.
Yeah, the new metal type stuff, yeah.
You know, man, listen, I'm a country boy from Northeast Alabama that grew up listening to Bad Company and you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd and Thin Lizzy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I'm not all of a sudden going to start screaming into the microphone and cranking up the bass drum really loud. And it just wasn't my thing, you know. And plus, our record company had been through so many changes, different label presidents. It's like every time we'd put out a new record, it was like starting over. And we, you know, we succeeded as far as like getting songs on the radio and people wanted to take us out. But man, our home lives were in the toilet.
Really?
You know, yeah, just because we were gone all the time.
Oh, I got you.
We were just gone and gone and gone. So we just kind of, it was exasperation, man. We just said, hey, you know what? we had a good time. We had our shot. Let's move on and do some other stuff. I had no way of knowing that an opportunity like Alice Cooper was going to come, you know, 2 or 3 years after that.
Yeah, I was going to say, because when you shut her down, you know, there's got to be a lot of questions, like what's going to happen now, the whole thing, right?
Yeah, there was a lot of that. I kept writing. Writing songs for myself. I co-wrote a few songs for some other people. I was fortunate to get a song on a Stevie Nicks album,
which was a huge
honor. Carlos Santana cut a song that I wrote with a couple friends of mine. But, you know, just never loving music any less. Just, you know, I kind of focused on my family and my kids, and I got remarried. And a couple years after that is when Alice Cooper called.
I want to back up just 1 second, because do you remember the last time I saw you in person?
No. Was it an Alice Cooper gig?
No, it wasn't. It was actually walking up the stairway to an after party at the Metallica show here in Detroit on 1999.
I do remember that, dude. Wow.
And I'm like walking
Kid
up the
Rock,
stairway. Yeah.
Metallica.
Nugent.
Seven Dust.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I'm walking up the stair. I'm like, that looks like Damon.
Holy mackerel, brother! That was 100 years ago.
Yeah,
it feels like
it was actually 18 years ago.
Well, that was a great night. My girl Linda she wasn't even my fiance yet, but she's from Detroit.
Right.
We met in Detroit and we went to that show together.
Yeah, then we went to the after party. And that was it's funny. I was thinking about this today. It's like that's when Kid Rock. That record had only really just exploded like 4 or 5 months earlier. You
yeah.
know what I'm saying? And he had actually played a sold-out show, not at the Fillmore or places down here, at the Palace of Auburn Hills like 3 months earlier.
Crazy.
It's unbelievable. And I'll tell you this much. Think about this. He's sold out every show and every venue he's played here since, including the football field, 2 shows at the baseball field. It's like unbelievable.
Talk about Detroit love, man.
Every show at DT, I think he's played DT over 20 times. Every show has been sold out.
Well, he was great that night.
Yeah.
I mean, he's great every night, you know. But it was really cool for me to be there. And thank you for reminding me that we saw each other that night.
But so then another Detroit guy, Alice Cooper. So how do you get that gig?
Just right place, right time. His old guitar player was a friend of mine, Eric Dover, who's also originally from Alabama. And Eric was getting ready to move on, and he told Alice, he said, I got a friend of mine. If he's available, this is the guy you're going to want. And Eric called and told me this, and I really thought he was maybe drunk or something. You know, I'm like, why would you want to leave Alice Cooper? That kind of thing. And sure enough, a couple weeks later, I got a call from their tour manager, and you know, I went out and auditioned. And
well, hang on for a sec. Why did he want to leave Alice Cooper?
You know, he was ready to move on and do some other stuff. You know, Eric's a great songwriter, singer, artist.
Wasn't he in Slash's band at one time?
He was. Yeah. He was in the original version of Snake Pit. He was in Jellyfish.
Okay.
Imperial Drag. I don't know if you remember that band.
No.
They made a couple cool records. But
I vaguely remember that. Yeah, not you mentioned.
So
that.
Yeah, so I went to Los Angeles in August of 2004 and auditioned. And my favorite story about that is I showed up. Linda and I had just had our son was born on Tuesday, and Thursday I fly out for this audition.
Geez.
So I show up essentially dressed like this, a black T-shirt, jeans, and some Chuck Taylors. And there's all these other guys auditioning for Cooper, and they all look like they're going to a Guns N' Roses video shoot, you know? And I stepped out of the car, and I just thought, oh, man, nobody told me.
Did you know any of these guys, or were they just guys from L.A.?
They were all guys from L.A.
Okay.
I didn't really know any of them. And Alice was not there. He was filming a television commercial at home in Phoenix, so they videotaped all the auditions. And I met the guys in the band. We played 4 or 5 songs.
What'd you play? All L songs?
Yeah. Yeah, we did. I remember we did 18, No More Mr. Nice Guy. And there's that epic long track of his Halo of Flies.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
got
yeah.
a ton of arrangement, a lot of parts. And, you know, I just did my homework, man. I didn't know what to expect. Honestly, I didn't even think I'd never auditioned. You know, this was all new for me, man. All completely new. So I just learned the songs and I learned the background vocals. And I'll never forget, Eric Singer was playing drums with him at the time, and we played one song and Eric just jumped off the drum kit and like threw his sticks on the ground and he's talking to the other guys in the band. He goes, "That's the guy right there."
Did you think for a second that he was going to say, get it?
No. Okay. Because we were really grooving. Okay. You know, we were vibing when we were playing and he just goes, "That's the guy." He goes, "None of these other dudes even listen to the drums. They're just posing." He goes, "This guy can play. This guy can sing. We should just stop."
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I felt pretty good about that. But it was a couple days later, I got a phone call from Alice himself. He called me back home in Alabama. And it's great, man. I asked him before we hung up the phone. I said, "Hey, man, would it be okay if I bring my golf clubs?" He goes, "You play golf?" And I was like, not very good. But, you know, I thought we could play 2 or 3 times a month.
Right.
He laughed. He goes, 2 or 3 times a month? He goes, "Damon, I play every day. You just won the lottery, my friend." And
so how many times did you think you golfed with Alice?
Meltdown. Listen, if there were 100 cities booked on the tour that year, we played at least 75 or 80 rounds of golf.
Jeez.
I was there 5 years, bro. Do that math.
Wow. So it's so
350. I'm talking about 18 holes.
So what's your golf game like?
Well, when I left to join Thin Lizzy, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I was about a 13 handicap.
Yeah.
Now, bro, that number has skyrocketed.
So, you know what's funny about that? So Chris Fain from Slipknot's a friend of ours.
Yeah.
And he'll be up here later on.
Yeah.
So we start talking about stuff earlier. And he starts telling me how he picked you up to go play golf one day.
He did.
And didn't know that you were Brother Kane.
Yeah.
And he told me on the phone, and I don't know if he told you this in person, but he said, "Dude, I was like literally starstruck because Brother Kane was such a huge band for me growing up."
Chris is so sweet, man. I remember Chris coming with a couple of other guys. I want to say we were in Minneapolis. This was way back, man, like 93 or 95, somewhere in there. And he was just hanging out. This was long before Slipknot,
right.
Long before any of that. And he had to remind me of that when we were, you know, literally on the tee box at this really swank golf course that he got us on.
And this was now he's in Slipknot.
Now he's in Slipknot,
yeah.
And he's invited us to play the golf course that he's a member at. You follow me?
Yeah, gotcha. So and this was with Alice, too?
This was with Alice, yeah. And we just had the best time.
Yeah, Alice must have told you, like, some amazing stories. I mean, you're out there golfing. You must have just, like... You must know that guy inside and out.
I could probably write a book just about the stories I've gotten from Alice Cooper. And it was funny for me, man, because over the years, I would hear some of the same stories. He's telling them to these guys that we're golfing with. Because every day, man,
right.
It's some other Callaway rep or some, you know, the head pro at a golf course that's out, you know, playing with us. And sometimes the stories would evolve a little bit, you know? And I remember one day he got in the cart, he goes, "Damon, never let a lie get in the way of a good story."
I've only met Alice a couple of times, and I've interviewed him a few times. And he's one of those guys, like, people always ask me all the time, like, who's the easy guy to interview? And it's like, well, Alice is one of those guys, because you could ask him anything. He's heard everything.
There's none better.
Yeah.
He's the best interview ever.
Yeah.
There's no one more comfortable in their own skin. He's got a story for everything. He knows everybody. And he's just such a great role model, man, for all of us in this crazy business, man. You know, Coop went through all the bumps and bruises as hard as anybody, man.
Yeah.
He came out the other side.
Maybe even harder than some.
Maybe harder. Oh, yeah. And, you know, his family is incredible. My two youngest kids, man, they grew up backstage. He's Uncle Alice
that's
to them.
Right. That's
you
cool.
Know?
Yeah.
And he lives to, like, load them up with caffeine and Twizzlers and send them on there.
Sounds like somebody else I know, like my father.
Yeah, man.
Hey, I wanted to ask you about, man, we can talk about Alice's stories for all day long, but I know you got stuff you got to get going here, but Taco Brothers, what's that all about?
Holy mackerel. I have not heard Taco Brothers mentioned.
And to scramble up the chicken rooster.
Who have you been talking to, and where did you hear that from?
Roman didn't say anything about this.
That's so great, man.
Yeah, I bump into Roman all the time, you know, on tour with Jesse, you know. I know Jesse for
years.
Awesome. And just a fun fact, a meltdown fun fact. I think I was the first guy to ever play Lumberjack on the radio.
Are you serious?
Yeah, my boss threw me the CD one day and said, play something else off this record. We were only playing the first, you know.
And you picked that.
And it just blew up. And next thing you know, they're playing a show.
Unbelievable.
They were ridiculously sold out.
Yeah, Roman and I and a group of other guys in Birmingham. This was right before Brother Kane made his, you know, debut record and put it out. So this was early 90s. We just had this cover band that sort of had a revolving door of guys, and it was a cool bunch of cats, man. And we played the best cover songs. We were covering like album tracks by Deep Purple, not the hits off of Appetite for Destruction, you know, Humble Pie, Black Crows.
And it was called the Taco Aerosmith. Brothers?
Yeah, we call it the Taco Brothers. Yeah. And one of the most memorable nights of the Taco Brothers is that Metallica came through town and they had a night off. And we had some friends that worked over at this strip club, the 2-3 blocks away.
Now, what year is this?
This would have been 91.
So the Black Record era?
Yeah. Oh, no, dude. They were on top of the world.
Jeez.
They were on top of the world. So these friends came in, and in tow were Lars Ulrich and I believe Jason Newsted was with him. It was either Kurt or Jason. I think it was Jason. So with much persuasion, because he didn't want to do it, we finally talked Lars into getting on stage and jamming with us.
In this Taco Brothers cover band.
In this Taco Brothers cover band. And the funny thing was, Meltdown, he wouldn't get off the stage. He had the best time, man. I bet we played like a set and a half of material, you know, and it was so much fun. Then roll the clock forward a year. I'm in Los Angeles recording the debut Brother Kane record. Our producer Jim Mitchell engineered the Use Your Illusion album for Guns N' Roses. He goes, hey Damon, Metallica and Guns are playing at the Rose Bowl, do you want to go? I'm like, are you kidding me? Let's go.
Yeah.
And so he rolls up in there, you know, with full credentials, and I see Lars backstage, and he comes over and he goes, hey man, what are you doing here? I'm like, bro, my band got a deal, we're making our record. And he was like,
he
totally remembered me. Take it a step forward. This is how awesome Lars is. Brother Kane played a festival in Milwaukee 2 years later. They were in town, night off, going to play the Enormo Dome.
Enormo Dome, right. I was just going to say that, yeah.
Guy rolls up, man, in his car and asks for me. So, like, the stage manager goes, Damon, there's some car out here, and somebody's asking for you. It looks important. And I go out there, and it's Lars. He goes, hey, man, get in. And I looked at the guys and said, I'll see you guys later. I'll be back. And so we went to some pub and hung out for a little bit. He's great.
That's cool. That's an awesome story, man.
Oh, man. For that much rock and roll to come through Birmingham, Alabama was pretty pretty mind-blowing.
And now you got this this Birmingham Tonight. Now, tell me about that. When did that come out?
Birmingham Tonight is my live album that I just released this fall, back in September. I've got a badass group playing my solo band. Tony Higbee and Jared Pope also play with Tom Kiefer in his band.
And awesome band.
Awesome band. Yeah. And my bass player, Tony Nagy. They're all from, we all live in Nashville. That was my one prerequisite. I said, I'm done with flying people in. It's too expensive. Either you live in Nashville or you're not playing in my
band.
And if
you can't find a good band in Nashville, you're just not looking,
something's
right?
wrong with you, man. I mean, it took me 5 minutes to put this group together. Chuck Garrick from Alice Cooper, who's one of my dearest friends, man, him and his wife, they live in Nashville too. He was my first call, and he said, bro, I'm out with Coop, and he's got his own thing going. And he goes, but I just saw this guy play 2 weekends ago, man. He was insane. You got to call him. So that's the guy, Tony. Now he's in my band.
Yeah.
But man, Birmingham Tonight is, I'm so proud of it, brother. It's got, you know, 16 songs, and they all kind of cover my whole career. There's some new material. There's some Brother Kane songs that we really crush, man. They sound great. Thin Lizzy song, and I'm actually going to put out the remaining songs from that night kind of as a bonus version. I'm going to put it up on the streaming sites this summer. And a killer Alice Cooper medley that we did that night that is very special, man. I sent it to Coop. He loves it. He's like, man, you sound more like me than I do sometimes.
you're singing, you're doing all the Cooper vocals.
Doing all the singing, man.
Man,
it's fun, you know, to keep those muscles in shape. You know, I do a lot of background vocals here with Black Star Riders. But, you know, man, it's just an honor to be a part of this band, to be able to make solo records as well. It's I'm just in a good place, Meltdown. I couldn't have seen this coming. You know, I told you about the end of Brother Kane. I kind of thought, well, that was it. Yeah. That was my shot. You know, maybe I'll go back to school and get that engineering degree, and who knows. And music just kept pulling at me, man. And here we are. I've put out more new music in the last 3 years than I have in the last 15 years. So I'm really proud of that.
Well, you've come all this way, and I've asked this to 30 musicians so far this year on my podcast. What's been the key to your success?
Love, man. The love of music. Mm. It's really the key. That and an amazing family. You know, my wife and my kids have been so supportive of me. I know on paper it looks like, well, hey, you're out earning a living and you support your family. Man, they're the ones that give me that support. They know that this is my calling. Mm. They know that this is... it's what I love, man. I mean, anybody that loves music can get good at something. They can get good at writing. They can get good at an instrument or singing or performing or whatever. And I just feel like having all these experiences over all these years has brought me to where I am right now. And, man, teenage me would have never believed this to be possible, man.
Do you remember the first time you picked up a guitar?
I do. My dad plays still to this day. My dad just turned 80, and he played a little guitar, and he would have some of his friends over, and they would do their, you know, attempts, half-hearted attempts at trying to be Chet Atkins, or they'd play Merle Haggard songs and Johnny Cash songs and stuff like that. But he had a younger brother that had a Fender Jazzmaster that he let me start playing when I was about 11, and I learned the chords to Taking Care of Business by Bachman Turner Overdrive. And bro, there was the rest is history. There was no looking back. When I figured out, you know, how you could find the note on the fat string of the key of the song you're listening to. Like, I remember when Back in Black came out, man, I sat there and learned every song, all 10 songs on the record, because they were easy. You know, they were all like, almost like you could learn the chords on an acoustic guitar. Mm. But when I plugged that in with a fuzz box, and it was like a drug, man.
Did you ever tell Angus Young that story? Have you ever had a chance to?
Never met Angus. Yeah. Of all the cats I've met, I haven't had the opportunity to tell him that. But I certainly met the guys in Skynyrd and told them. I met Scott Gorham on a golf course.
Oh, is
not
that right?
Ironically, with Alice Cooper in 2006.
What kind of golfer is he?
Scott's a good player. Yeah. He's a good stick. But to get to tell Scott, you know, how much those Thin Lizzy records changed my life. And, you know, this was 5 years before I joined Thin Lizzy. So, you know, music has brought me to these opportunities to meet a lot of my idols. Mm-hmm. And to be able to thank them, because, dude, that stuff is heavy. It's emotional for me, you know. I got to do a gig with Sting.
Oh, really?
I played a one-off in Las Vegas with Sting and Steven Tyler and Jeff Beck. That was the band I was in, Meltdown, for three songs. Who gets to do that?
What songs did you play?
We played Sweet Emotion. Imagine Sting playing that killer bass line to Sweet Emotion. We played Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself by Sly and the Family Stone. And we did a solo song of Steven's. He had just put out a new track.
It's got to be one of those moments in life where even I get these, you know, I'm just a podunk kid from, you know, outside of Buffalo, New York, right?
Exactly. You and me, bro.
And it's like, you know, and it's like here I am talking to whoever. And it had to be the same moment for you.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
You know, it was just crazy. I remember looking down at my boots as we're walking out on stage and, you know, Steven's to my left and Beck and Sting are to my right. And I'm just like, wow. So, you know, to get to meet these people and shake their hand and say, hey, man, thank you. Because if it weren't for those records you made, those killer songs that you wrote, I wouldn't be here right now. You know, that stuff changed my life.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll cut it off right there, Damon. I do appreciate you taking the time. Listen, you know, after I shut this off, we got to talk about kids hockey and all this other stuff because, you know, I know way about. How old is your son?
He's 13. He'll be 14 in August.
All right, my son's 15 this year. Yeah, trust me.
Killer, man.
Yeah.
He loves hockey. Can you believe he's getting to play hockey in Nashville, Tennessee, of all places?
Hey, hockey's a big thing now.
So. It is a big thing now.
Dude, super great to see you.
Brother, thank you so much, Meltdown. Awesome. Thank you.
That's good stuff right there in the Radio Chatter podcast. Got to thank Damon Johnson for taking all the time with me today and talking about just tons of stuff. As a matter of fact, there's so much more we didn't get a chance to talk to. So I asked him if we could do a part two sometime in the future. And of course, he said yes. He was actually in Detroit. I guess his wife is from the area and his wife and kids were around. So he was kind of checking his phone here and there to see if they were coming out. So we had like this short window and I didn't want to take up too much of his time, but really great to catch up with Damon. And that Taco Brothers, that came to me from his friend Roman Glick, the bass player, and brother Kane, now with Jesse James Dupree and Jackal. And I talked to Roman and I said, listen, dude, we got to get you on the podcast. He said, I'd be honored. So we'll talk with Roman coming up in a future podcast. Got a couple good ones for you. Speaking of Southern Rock, Charlie Starr from Blackberry Smoke is going to be on an upcoming episode. If you're into Southern Rock, man, this band should be on your radar. If not, definitely check out Blackberry Smoke. We'll talk to him coming up. Like I said in the intro, make sure you check me out on Twitter at MeltdownWRIF. Please, by all means, leave a 5-star review if you like the podcast that you've heard. Go back and check out some of the past. Just last week, we had Biff Byford from Saxon. Brad Arnold, awesome interview from Three Doors Down, talking about his sobriety and whatnot. Had the guys from 311 and Noodles from Offspring, too, just last week. So you never know what you're going to get. Subscribe as well to the Radio Chatter podcast and share this on social media. And like I say every time, thank you so much for listening to Radio Chatter.